On this episode of Still Loading, Russian Berets. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, we are talking about a relatively obscure game. It's a game that I covered once before on the podcast, but it was back in the days of the 40 for 40 series. And for those who remember, for the longtime listeners, and if you are still a listener from this era, God bless you, because that I was not a good podcaster back in that era. The 40 for 40 series was an era where I covered 40 complete in the box NES games and did an episode on each of them. Some of them turned out pretty good. Some of them turned out awful. And in all honesty, in my opinion, most of them didn't turn out that great. You may remember last year when I did an episode with Dearest Abby on Donkey Kong, I talked a bit about this, and it's a similar issue with this. While I do not have the game we're talking about complete in box, it was covered on an episode of the 40 for 40 series. It was actually covered on an episode with a game called Round Ball, which I don't remember anything about, so that says enough about that game. This week, we're going to be talking about the game Russian Attack by Konami. And with me is Chris Copeland from the Retro Hangover Podcast. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking about some Russian attacking.
Now, it's a very when you read the name off, it's a little misleading. We're not actually talking about Russians, though you could maybe infer that by who you're fighting in the game, but it's actually Rush apostrophe N. So you're rushing, you're rushing and attacking. Yeah, ghouls and ghosts, pretty much. So this game, like I said, was developed by Konami. It came out originally in the arcade in Japan on September 4th, 1985. And then it was released later on in North America in December of 88. Oh, my God. I can't even read my own handwriting. It's 85. I don't know what the fuck I wrote there. That was not a five, though. That does not look like a five. I can't even read my own handwriting. It is 1985, December of 1985. It's more popular and well-known release was for the NES. For the NES, it was released in North America on April 7th, 1987, and in Europe on June 8th, 1989. It also received a Famicom Disk System port in Japan on April 10th, 1987. So it did get a Japanese release, but not for, I mean, technically for the Famicom, but it was the disk system version of it. So not a lot of people know about this game. You know, I sent Chris a list of all the different games that I covered on the 40 for 40 series that I wanted to redo. And Chris, I don't know why you chose this. No one knows about this game. So what made you want to talk? What gave you this urge to talk about Russian Attack?
Well, first of all, it's just one of those games I played when I was a kid. You know, you always see a game that you play when you're a kid and you want to do those ones. And the other lists you gave me are like, I kind of know a little bit about them. And some of them I did play as a kid too, but I didn't have as fond memories. And I think that's also because the game we're about to talk about is very short. And so you can see a lot of the game in a very short amount of time. It's a more difficult game and it has addictive gameplay, as I'm sure we're going to get into. But the reason I picked it is just, it seems like one of those games to me that, no, it's not usually talked about when you're talking about, you know, big Nintendo games. Certainly no one talks about the arcade version. I've never even played the arcade version.
All.
Nor have I seen it. But when you say Russian Attack, it's one of those games you're like, hey, Russian Attack for the NES. And people are like, yeah, I remember that game. And it seems like it's one of those games that no one talks about, but everybody's played. And everyone has a good idea about it. Kind of like Narc is another game that kind of falls in that category. It's like no one ever talks about that.
Fun.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I love Narc. Well, maybe if you talk about that, I'll be back on. But I think if you ask 9 out of 10 people who are still into gaming that had an NES growing up as a kid, if they didn't have Russian Attack, they knew someone who had Russian Attack, or they at least played Russian Attack. And I think that's why I chose this episode. People have played it.
I now want to make this a reoccurring segment on the show where I'm going to ask every guest if they grew up with the NES. And if they did, I'm going to ask them if they played Russian Attack or knew someone who had Russian Attack. And we're going to put this theory to a very unscientific test. This is not going to be it's not going to be a very controlled group, but I'm curious to see what people would say. But yeah, I was very curious when, because I sent you games like Kirby's Adventure on NES and like all these other, like a lot more well-known bigger titles. So I was very surprised when you picked this. And I'll be honest, at first I was kind of like, man, I don't know if I could do a full hour on this game. And who knows, maybe we can't. But after doing some research on this game, I was fascinated by it. Like I've played it. I played it for the episode back, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe six now when I did the 40 for 40 series. But I was very surprised just by how much information about the different versions there are of this game. Now, I couldn't find much about the actual game's development in terms of, you know, stuff that happened during the development. But in terms of what happened afterwards, this game was called Green Beret in pretty much everywhere but North America. It was called Russian Attack in North America. It was called Green Beret in Japan and in Europe and all that other stuff. Besides the arcade port and original arcade and the NES and Famicom ports, it was also ported to a ton of personal computers over in Europe. I mean, the ZX Spectrum, the Commodore 64, the Atari 8-bit computers, the BBC Micro, the MSX. It was ported to a bunch of different places. And one of the coolest things I found in doing research for this is if you look at Hardcore Gaming 101's article on Russian Attack, it has screenshots of all the different versions of and what they all look like. And it's honestly fascinating. And the NES and arcade versions look the best by far. The arcade one looks arguably the best, but like based off these screenshots that I'm seeing here, there's not that much of a difference between NES and the arcade version, at least in my opinion, in terms of graphics, I should say. There's definitely, I would say the arcade has a slight edge, but still, it's not that much. Every other version looks like ass. It's the 360. Well, the 360 and Game Boy Advance remakes look really good, but like the versions on like the MSX, the IBM PC, the Atari 8-bit, the BBC Micro, this Commodore 64 looks fine. There's the Commodore 16 it looks like stencils is the best way I can put it. It's very strange looking. The graphics don't look awful, but from what I was reading, because I don't, maybe you might be able to speak to more of this, Chris. I have a hard time in video game history being able to compare eras. Like when you look at a game, how does it stand up compared to its contemporaries when it was released? According to Hardcore Gaming 101, this did not stand up compared. Like graphically, it did not look as good as other games that came out in 1987 for the NES. Would you agree with that?
Generally speaking, yes. I would have to go back to 1987 and take a look, but this is a Famicom Disk System game, and this is right around the time that you see a lot of games moving over to the MMC chip and starting to get more advanced. Does it look as good as Mega Man? Absolutely not. It doesn't. But you know what? I think it looks better than Zelda 2, and Zelda 2 came out in 86 or 87. Yeah, I think it looks better than Zelda 2, hands down.
I would say from the side, I can say, actually, you know what? I can see what you're saying. Sorry, I cut you off though. Yeah.
I think it's more colorful and do later NES games. Like I think right around the end of 87, 88. And again, I need to go back and take a look at the games that came out in those years to get a really good comparison, but it's not top of the line. Certainly not. Even if you look at the arcade from 85 and you consider what's coming out in the arcades in 85, the arcade game doesn't even really measure up to what's coming out there. But it's really a basic Konami game, and it's kind of in line with what Konami was doing, where graphically, I don't think anything that really what Konami was doing graphically back then was well beyond above and beyond what was comparatively out there. Capcom was killing it, but Konami was like B tier. They weren't C, but I think that's where Russian Attack is. It's a B tier game in terms of graphics. It's not showing exactly what the NES can do, but then again, like, again, it's a Famicom Disk System game, so it's not going to. None of the Famicom Disk System games look all that great, even when you take into consideration like Doki Doki Panic to Super Mario Brothers 2. Super Mario Brothers 2 is a better looking game.
I actually did not know that. I haven't seen a lot of those comparisons.
It has more animations. Yeah, it has more animations everything like that in the background. Because they're limited by space. I think it was 128 kilobytes per side for a disk system game, which is bigger than the original Famicom cartridges, of course. That's why they made it. But by the time 1987 was rolling around, we had the MMC cart. So, yeah, you did start seeing better looking games. And even if you look at like Konami's efforts at the time, because both Castlevania and Castlevania 2 were Famicom Disk System games, too. And Russian Attack doesn't look too dissimilar from those. It's about the same graphical quality. And if you consider Castlevania 2 to look better than Castlevania 1, I think Russian Attack looks better than Castlevania 2.
I would say more or less then that's just good art direction from Konami than anything. Because if graphically, you know, Castlevania 1 is lesser, I think the art direction on that is super, super strong. I always feel like there's the one thing you can tell, like when there's, I think one of the biggest noticeable things for me is like when you're looking at better tech inside the NES cartridges is, are there outlines on the sprites? You know, like is there like a black border around the sprites? I have nothing to make that statement. Like I'm not basing that off of anything. It's just kind of like passing knowledge. And I'd have to look into every, like, what, I wonder what the origins of an outline on a sprite is, you know, like a border. I wonder what the first game was that had that. But like, I feel like on the NES specifically, you can tell when the tech started getting upgraded inside the cartridges, because old school NES games, the sprites are just blocks with no border. And as you see time go along, and obviously when you get to games like Mario 3 with the MMC3 chip, then you have like full on, it looks like a cartoon at that point. It doesn't look like just video game pixels. It looks like a pixelized cartoon. And I kind of see that with Russian Attack here. There's outlines, there's a border to the character, like all of the enemies kind of have this black, so we kind of get this black outline, so it kind of gives a little bit of a drawn look to an extent, not like cartoonish or anything like that, but you kind of, it makes everything much more visually distinct, and it kind of makes it pop to the eye, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And Konami was really good at that at the time. I would say, like, if you go back to 1987, this is Konami really making good looking games for that year. Not like later on, because of course, like you just said, like Super Mario Brothers 3 absolutely crushes it. What's another game they made? The Hi, I'm Oopa, like the baby game where you have the bottle.
That game looks really good. Boku. Oh yeah, yeah, the Boku, because it only came out in Japan, right?
Yeah,
yeah. The only reason I even know about that game is there is a, the podcast is no longer running, but there's a speed running podcast called The Frame Savers, and that was the first game they talked about. I had never heard of that game prior to it. I'm like, what, you play as a baby? That's weird.
Yes.
It's interesting.
We'll say the animations they have, not a lot of animation, and that is a knock against this game. Like very few frames.
It's very simplistic, and I mean it kind of does the job though, like especially with the gameplay itself is pretty simplistic, but not in a bad way. I don't mean that as a strike against it, because you have an old trusty knife that you just run around stabbing people with, and your guy can stab at the speed of light as fast as you can press the button. This dude's arm, just his shoulder muscles must be jacked from how fast he can stab this thing. He carried a bazooka. This guy, he's a multitasker, you know. Who else can shoot a bazooka while stabbing with a knife? Whoever this
like
guy
a
is,
Green Beret or something.
The NES game, the character is unnamed, but in the original game, in the original version of the game, the character's names, if I'm reading this correctly, was Ben and Steve, because the original arcade version was it could be co-op. You could play with two players. I believe that you could play with two. Hold on. Now, was the any? I'm second guessing myself, because I could have sworn one of them is co-op and one of them is not, and I am blanking now on which it is. I'm going to be really mad even, if I got that wrong.
I don't think it's co-op. I don't think it is.
But there's one version that is co-op, but I could not tell you off the top of my head right now.
Oh, it is co-op.
Is it the arcade version? Am I right with that? Or is it the NES version? Now I'm like, see, that's what version. I'm... The NES version's co-op. See, that's weird. It seems very strange to me. Maybe it was the disc system version was co-op?
And it is co-op? It is Steven. I'm looking at the instruction manual right now, and it's Steve and Ben.
It's Steven?
Steve and Ben.
Steve and Ben. Okay. Yep. So yeah, what the, I love localization back in this day where they're like, I mean, this at least this Steve and Ben kind of fit because it's very like Green Beret is like an American type of thing. So at least it fits with that. But I always find it funny where like you'll have this very Japanese looking game with a lot of like anime style characters and the dude's name is like Craig or something like that. Like just something that does not fit. I'm like, that is great grade A localization right there.
My name is
Tim. Tim. Yeah, my name is Tim. So it was called Green Beret everywhere else. It was called Russian Attack in the US. And the arcade version of the game is different than the NES version. In the arcade version, there are four stages, and the objective within those stages is to rescue a group of POW prisoners. And the four areas of the arcade version, you have the marshalling area, the harbor area, the air base, and then the Siberian camp. And each area ends with a different boss. And we'll kind of go into the bosses once we talk about the gameplay. The NES version added two new stages. There was a stage that was added in between the harbor and the airbase, which was just the airport. I don't really know what the difference is in terms of logistics between an airport and an airbase. I mean, isn't the airport on the airbase, right?
Maybe one's civilian, one's military, or
maybe
you're on
maybe.
The base. You're on the base, and you're going towards the terminal. Like one's the base terminal, and the other thing is around the whatever. I don't know. I'm just fishing.
And then the final stage that they added was at the very end. That was the last stage. They added a new final stage, and it was actually inside of the enemy's base, and it gave you a final boss. The arcade version did not have a final boss. You would essentially, if you beat all four stages, it would just repeat and it would be on a harder difficulty. And then you would just keep going until you lost all your quarters, essentially. And that's all there really was to the arcade. I mean, that's the big core difference. The other difference between the arcade version and the NES version is they actually added a story to it instead of fighting POW or sorry, finding, not fighting POWs. That would be a really dark game. Just going, breaking into a base just to get,
you can't escape. You can't let people know what happened here. They're aliens. Like,
just think of how, messed
they're poisoning
up
the water.
Be.
During the frogs
how
gay.
Messed up would that be? You like you sneak into a base, you sneak into an enemy base, yeah, just to beat the shit out of your own POWs. How messed up would that be? So no, you're rescuing POWs in the arcade version, and in the NES one, the story is you are trying to stop the enemy from this unnamed enemy, unless it's like, I don't know, is it mentioned somewhere in the manual like who the actual enemy is? I don't have the manual, so I can't look at it. But
it's all in Japanese. I can.
Oh yeah, you can. I forgot you have the Japanese version. Yeah. But you basically have to stop them from shooting off this missile, and that's the final boss. So that's, you have to fight this. You have to fight a missile. That's how the game ends. And those are pretty much the differences that I saw. Is there any differences that you would want to point out that you were able to find between the arcade and NES versions?
Bosses are slightly different. That's about it. I mean, the core concept is there, and I really haven't played much of the arcade version, to be completely honest with you. I've just mostly stuck to the NES version, which is, I think, most people's experience with this game. Because we went back to it, and again, I have never seen an arcade of this game or an easily obtainable reproduction of it. Like, all that I can get from the arcade is just what I can see in video media, like on YouTube and stuff like that.
Either that, or you get a get it on MAME or something like that.
Something
if,
like that.
If there's even a MAME version. Yeah, I mean, this game, the way it's kind of described on Hardcore Gaming 101, and I don't want to keep referencing them because I don't want to take their, you know, it's their content. I don't want to read off their content, but I thought they made a really good point that the NES version is kind of like a remixed version of the arcade, where the game, the core gameplay is there, the core overall design and level structure is there, but they just kind of add some new things. One of the, oh, they did remove a weapon from the arcade version in the, or sorry, they removed a weapon in the NES version compared to the arcade version. I forget what it was, but they removed a weapon. I think it's the flamethrower. I don't think there's a flamethrower in the NES version. You can get a pistol, which I believe is unlimited ammo for during throughout, but it's timed. Like, you can only use it for a short amount of time. And there's also, they also added in the NES version an invulnerability star thing, which once again is a timed power up where, you know, you're invulnerable for that amount of time. But that's all the info I was able to find on the differences between the arcade and NES version. It's more just the added levels. They got rid of the flamethrower in the NES version. I believe they added the pistol in it. Yes, actually, I'm just double checking it now. Only the rocket launcher and grenades are in there, and but they got the two new power-ups, the star, which is an old invincibility, and the pistol. So let's dive into, unless there's anything else you'd want to touch on, let's dive into the gameplay. I only got to really watch the gameplay, but you got to actually experience it. So what are your takeaways from what you were able to play?
Very simplistic, but I think, you know, it's addictive enough and it's well designed enough that it functions, and it functions well. Like, it's not perfect because it's one of those games where when you press up, that's jump. Yeah, that's deeply problematic, and I understand why they did it, because your the B button is your attack button, so like, and you can press that, you can rapidly attack with your knife, which works out well. Like, I like the attack. I think the attack feels well. Moving left and right is good. Ducking is good. All that's good. The A button is reserved for whatever power up you previously picked. So typically you'll see stuff like your bazooka, and every single time you pick up a bazooka, you get one use of that bazooka, I think until like the final stage. And then you get one use of that bazooka, and then you get, or a grenade or a pistol, and however many uses, and it sums up at the top how many uses you have. And that will be to use that weapon instead of jumping. So if A was jump, it'd be great. Right? It'd be fantastic, because not only is A jump, but it's also to climb up ladders. So yeah, that kind of sucks. But I never find myself having to jump too often, unless you have like landmines, and then it becomes, yeah, you have to jump, obviously, because you don't want to run over a landmine. But it's not, because it's not a platformer, I don't think it offends me too much. And because you don't need to do any sort of precision jumping, and most of it's just running at enemies and attacking them, I think
stabbing
it's fine.
Them with that knife of yours.
Yeah, stabbing them. In many ways, this is like a poor man's kung fu. From it 100% is, because all you're doing, like, there's an endless wave of enemies, and the objective is to get to the end of the stage. The only difference between this and kung fu is, in kung fu, you do face a boss at the end of the level, whereas in this game, with the exception of the very last level, you face just a wave of enemies. And it's the good thing is too, is like, every single enemy type that you face has different patterns, and you can tell this by the color that they are. Again, kind of like kung fu. And you have to have a different tactic based off how they attack you. Now, there's also environmental hazards, like people throwing grenades at you from trash cans or barrels or whatever.
There's also those enemies up in the towers that shoot down on you that you can't really reach easily.
You can't get them at all. You can't. You have
could
to
you maybe
them.
Toss a grenade up there?
No.
And
even
can't
if
even,
you could,
so you just have to.
No.
They at least design around that, from what I saw, where those guys shoot slow. It's not like it's a machine gun that just sprays across. They have a slow rate of fire, so you can even their bullet travels slowly across the screen. So you have time to dodge it, but you have to be conscious that it can happen. Side note, before we continue, I just thought this would be it's a bit of a non sequitur, and this will take 2 seconds. Remember I said I covered this game before on a round ball episode? Well, we're about 27 minutes into recording, you know, that after some edits, it's probably going to be like 25 or something like that. That whole episode was 21 minutes long. So we've already passed the length of the original episode. For all of my remakes of the 40 for 40, I should talk about that. Like, here's where we passed the original mark of that, the episode that I covered this the first time. So, yeah. And if you do that, if you think about that, I probably only spend about 10 minutes on this game. So we are already almost triple what I did on this game the first time. I need help. All right. Sorry. Continue.
But when you look at the gameplay, I think what stands out most about it, I think this is why I like the game, in spite of like when I'm talking about it, I'm thinking about it like, wow, this is a deeply flawed game. And it is. But I think what I like about it is that it's fair. The rules that it gives you are easily navigatable. Like you said, the bullets that come at you, they're slow. And yeah, after there is this kind of trial and error approach to it, which I know a lot of people don't like. But you're talking about a game that is 15 minutes long. And I don't think it necessarily requires memorization in order to get through it, like a lot of Nintendo games did. So if you recognize enemies that are coming towards you and you know what they're going to do, like you have one that does a jump attack, you have one that just runs towards you and you have different, but then they come at varying speeds. You have some that will shoot you with pistols. Knowing that and knowing how to dispatch them properly, once you understand those concepts, makes this game extremely accessible. And I think anybody at any skill level could get reasonably good at it, maybe not beat it, but get reasonably good at it to a point within a short amount of time that it gives you a feeling of satisfaction and accomplishment, which is something that you don't find in a lot of harder NES games, which is why I think when you talk about a game like Russian Attack, even if it's not often talked about, because again, it is a deeply flawed game and it has its issues, people generally talk about it fondly and positively. Because this is a game I think anybody can make to the second or third level the first time they fire it up. And it gets you far enough and is simple enough that you're going to try and come back later.
I would 100% agree with that. Because I, like I said, I do own this game. I just wasn't able to really have a chance. Like it's, we were talking off mic, my recording schedule this week is chaos. So I have a lot of prep for like 6 different episodes to do. So I didn't get much of a chance to play it, but I did, like I said, I did watch the playthrough of it. And the thing that from what I remember of playing it and also just watching it, one thing I really love that they do is that like you're saying, it is difficult to an extent, but also one thing we haven't mentioned, all the enemies die in one hit. So it's very easy to just burn your way through the game because while there is an element of memorization and rinse, wash, repeat in terms of having to get back through levels that you've failed, that you've died on previously, it's not a long game. It very clearly tells you what each enemy is going to do as they run onto the screen because they color code all the enemies. I also think one thing that they do that I really like is in lieu of the final bosses, like you said, it kind of gives you like a final wave of enemies, but generally that final wave of enemies shows you a new enemy type that you're going to start experiencing more after that level's over. So it's not entirely that, but you know, like sometimes they introduce new enemies prior to those boss areas, but it is nice because those final areas give you a way in kind of like a condensed non-moving space. It's a little less frenetic because you're not constantly having to move from all the bullets and everything shooting around you. But the challenge that it throws at you the challenge is now, oh, we have this new enemy type that you haven't seen before. How are you going to work through this? How are you going to figure out how to combat this? Are you going to be able to figure out this new pattern that we are throwing at you? And then once you do, by beating that new encounter, the next level, you're back to kind of that frenetic, fast-paced action of like running through the level with your little stabby stab, just trying to figure out all the different enemies. And they also, like you mentioned, let's be real, the controls are the biggest flaw in this game. It just, the fact that you hit up to jump is just... it is one of the biggest sticking points for anyone who watches the Angry Video Game Nerd will know that's one of the things he rails about all the time, is when you hit up on the D-pad to jump. But what you can do is that there's different levels. Like, you can climb up on like shipping containers or something like that, or a fence. And sometimes there's even three levels that you can climb up on, but that doesn't happen too often. But you have multiple levels, so you can like get up and away from the enemies and kind of observe their patterns from a distance. But obviously you still have to move forward, and you're eventually going to have to fight enemies, whether that be on the ground or jumping over landmines, as you mentioned before.
What you pointed out there too is that there's this level of verticality, so you kind of can pick your own path in a way and mm-hmm. manage what you think is most conducive to your playstyle. So even in, like, they do this in the first couple levels where you'll have tanks that you can get on top of, and enemies will be on top of the tanks, or you don't have to go on top of them. You just go underneath the tanks. So if you go on top of them, you're going to get a different enemy type than what you would get on the bottom part. So that aspect of memorization too can make your gameplay a lot easier, your playthrough. And starting to memorize where enemies are and what the best path is towards completion is part of this game. Because, as we said, this game is born out of the arcade. And that's what an arcade game essentially is focusing on mastering, first of all, the skills and how to execute precision, and memorization of the level layout, particularly in a game like Russian Attack. So when you add in that verticality, yes, I mean, you can go all the way up to the top, and then you can pretty much bypass a lot of those enemies underneath. But the question is, what kind of enemies are you going to encounter up there? Because you have to be prepared for it. And if you're not prepared for it, you're going to die.
You also have less space to work with generally when you go up the levels, because now, even if you don't necessarily physically have less space, you feel a little bit more claustrophobic, because when you jump, your player goes to the top of the screen. And while that doesn't kill you and you're generally not going to fall back down, I feel like it kind of does something a little effective to make it feel a little bit more claustrophobic for you, because you feel like you have less space to work with to dodge enemies or to attack them. It's kind of like, you ever see the movie, this is a very loose connection, but I like talking about this because I find it interesting. You ever see the movie 12 Angry Men?
Long time ago. You're talking about like the jury movie. Yeah,
the 50 movie from the 50s. Yeah. It's a very good one. It's honestly one of my favorite movies of all time. But in the original movie, I think it was directed by Sidney Lumet. I'm going to double check on that while we're speaking. But what they do to kind of increase the feeling of claustrophobia, it was Sidney Lumet. I was right. As the movie goes on and as tensions rise in the jury room, the camera, like the shot of each juror gets smaller and smaller. So you're getting closer and closer to their face, where by the end, you only really see their face in the box. So while nothing's changing in terms of like the room they're in and all this other stuff, you start feeling more claustrophobic because there's less space between you and the actor on the camera. And it kind of reminds me a little in a very abstract way of this, where like as you move up to the higher levels and you change, like you said, verticality, you change the level you're on, it makes you feel a little bit more condensed and stuck in your own area. And as the game gets on and the game gets more frenetic, you really have to weigh those risks as you go on.
Sure.
Now, there's a bunch of different levels in here. Like I mentioned before, there's the marshalling area, the harbor area, the air base, the Siberian camp, and then there's also the two new ones in the NES version, which we're, just to be clear, if it's not already, we're predominantly talking about the NES and Famicom Disk System version of this game, because that's what we both know. I have the NES version. Chris has the Famicom Disk System version. Do you notice any real difference in the levels other than the visual differences? Like, I really feel like a lot of levels feel samey. Am I right with that, or do you disagree?
There's just like a general increase in environmental hazards and what's going on in terms of how enemies are attacking you from the background. The enemies themselves don't really change. Now, you do have certain enemy types that do get more aggressive, like the orange dudes. they will be more aggressive in terms of how they follow you or how they pursue you. So in like the first level, all the orange guys, they drop items. They're all bazooka droppers. In the second one, you have the same guys, but sometimes they drop bazookas and sometimes they drop grenades. But you also have another orange dude that fires a pistol. And you can duck underneath the pistol and they'll run towards you and you can stab them. When you get to later stages, now they start following you upstairs and being more aggressive in terms of how they're pursuing you. So every single level, in terms of just general design, yeah, it's exactly the same. It takes a page right out of, again, Kung Fu or Super Mario Brothers, because even all of those levels don't necessarily feel very different. It's just the difficulty itself is rising. So you have to be more keen in how you approach it and what kind of enemy types you have to deal with and how best to attack those enemy types. Just like any game of the era or any arcade game of the time period, right? So, no, they're not different. But I do like the fact that they do change up the way that they look, because that...
Yeah, otherwise it just gets stale.
I guess by 87, that was kind of standard anyway. You would hope so. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, you're right. This game is the same game from level 1 through level 6. It doesn't really vary itself often. And all that really changes is the hazards it throws at you and the patterns of the enemies that you have to dispatch. That's it. Or get past.
One thing this has gotten me thinking, one thing I really like about like looking at games and analyzing them is looking at each game's approach to how they handle difficulty. So like this game's approach to difficulty is, like you said, it doesn't change up the levels. It changes up the enemy patterns and the enemy AI, essentially. It just makes the enemy, it doesn't make the enemies harder to kill. It makes them more aggressive, or it throws more of them at you. Yeah. You look at a game like Portal, and that is all, like, the environment is changing by and large. Like, yeah, there's a couple enemies here and there, but your move set doesn't change, but your environment does completely, and you have to figure out how to get through it as it presents a new challenge to you. Other games, I'm thinking, sorry, what were you going to say?
I would say the environment does change, because starting in level 2, you start having the snipers from the towers, and then you get to the levels that have the guys in the barrels that are tossing grenades at you, and then you have
Okay.
The environment changes. It changes subtly enough that one could say that the levels don't change very much from level to level, because the gameplay certainly doesn't.
Yeah, because I consider those enemies, but they're kind like they are, but they're environmental enemies instead of enemies that spawn on screen. Like those sniper towers and those guys in barrels are going to be there no matter what, as you walk through a level. If for some reason you're able to turn off enemy spawning, they would be there no matter what, because they're part of the level, if that makes sense. So I could see what you mean by their environmental hazards, and they kind of change it. I would say the core difficulty doesn't come from the environmental change, though. Like Portal, the difficulty spike, it's all environment. In this one, yes. In Russian Attack, I would say it's more the enemy patterns and the enemy AI, and how they throw stuff at you. And, you know, obviously more modern games, they kind of do mixtures of everything. Some game, like, I'm for some reason in my head, I keep thinking of Horizon Zero Dawn, and that gives you like RPG elements, but the end, they do a combo where the enemies get harder to kill, but then they also have more complex AI and harder enemies thrown at you. But that's neither here nor there. But I do find that interesting how, like, what games do to raise the difficulty as the game goes on, like what mechanics and what design choices did the developers make to increase enemies or to increase the difficulty? Because my least favorite version of this is generally just the, we'll make them harder to kill and add more of them. Like, right. I hate that. It feels very cheap, because then all of a sudden, like, all the everything you're doing before, like, it doesn't work. At least with this, you kill enemies in one hit. So you're not doing any less damage, but they're throwing different patterns and more different patterns at you at once. And that makes the challenge more engaging to me, because then it's like, oh, this is something interesting and new. It kind of shocks the system a little bit, at least in my opinion, at least from what I have noticed. Now, is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of the gameplay? I was going to kind of move on to music and just some other aesthetic stuff with it, but is there any other point? Oh, we didn't even talk about the bosses. I completely forgot about that. Like bosses. The end of the level. Well, the final boss of this, at least, sure. is something.
Which is still, I mean, not really a boss, but
it's more of an event. It's one of those things where instead of giving you a boss, it's like an event that you have to, like a challenge that you have to complete.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have like, there are some bosses. You have the paratroopers, you have the people in helicopters, you have the rocket men. And then at the very end, you have like a rocket you need to fire your RPG or bazooka at, right? They're not spectacular because they're still one hit. Like everybody here is one hit. It's just how you get to them and how you hit them. But they do offer different patterns. They do offer a different way of attacking them. And I think like the only time you really see a dog is in the boss fight. I think I might be wrong.
Yes. But, and I always found that strange where you just crouch down and just stab dogs as they run at you. It's a very strange, it's like, yeah. It's not that difficult really.
But yeah, it's generally just waves of enemies. No, I mean, they're not really inherently difficult if you know how to approach them. Like even the bosses themselves, like the rocket men, they're just kind of lobbing grenades at you, but the grenades don't move too fast. So like I don't want to say you have to try to die because again, this game, like if you're watching it, it looks deceptively easy. And I think that's another reason why this gameplay is so addictive is because the game is deceptively easy. Like you die and you're like, I shouldn't have died there. Like I totally, nah, like I just screwed up my input. Like that couldn't have been it. But you do look at a lot of the enemy design, even going through the level to the boss. And there are times where they definitely do trap you in situations where you have to be much more cognizant about the enemy patterns coming at you. And the same with the bosses. Like you just got to manage your space and manage what the bosses are doing. And they're not particularly difficult, but they're not a cakewalk either. You do have to have some planning. You have to have some strategy going into it, even though like we watched a long play of it and it looks like anyone could do that. But then you get there and you're like, how do I do that?
I feel like long plays make games look a lot easier than they actually are, because generally it's like
NES games,
either someone who's played it a bunch of times or it's one of those videos where they piecemeal together a bunch of perfect runs, like perfect segments to create what looks like a perfect run. Yeah, some of the other bosses though that I thought were interesting, there's the like auto gyros, which are like those like helicopter looking dudes.
Yeah.
Or no, maybe not helicopter. There's also like these paratrooper guys I found kind of interesting that like kind of float down at like interesting patterns. You mentioned before you also fight tanks, not necessarily as a boss, but something I forgot to bring up earlier that I really wanted to. I love the fact that you can one hit kill tanks with your knife or like close to that. It just the idea, like the logistics of just someone like blowing up a tank with a knife is endlessly amusing to me. That actually reminds me, you ever play, I've never played this series. This might be a little blasphemous, but I've never played a Civ game, Civilization.
Okay.
My friend, just this ties into knives and tanks, I promise. My friend was playing, I don't know which one, maybe Civ 2 or 3 or something like that. And he has this knack, no matter what game he's playing, to find some weird thing in the game logic that just does weird shit to him. So he was he built up his military like super advanced. He had tanks, machine guns. And he went to go fight Japan, who was still in the feudal age in this game. Like he had outpaced them technologically that fast. Mm-hmm. And the samurai took out his entire army of tanks. Just like one, like, because everything always has that chance to, like, no matter how advanced you are, there's like always a chance that something can like defeat the other unit, even if it's slim. And it just seemed to hit. The samurai army defeated his army of tanks and soldiers. Wow. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. He also is the same person who, when playing Oregon Trail, was able to avoid, like, he didn't buy any winter clothes for his people. He just bought the largest wagon he possibly could, filled it with a shitload of raw meat and a barrel of pickles, and they all survived.
It's the pickle juice, man. That's what it is.
It's prevents scurvy
qualities.
No scurvy. But anyway, yeah, so like you're saying, the bosses really aren't bosses, but the final one I found at least somewhat fun. Like from what I watching the gameplay of it, I thought it was kind of cool how it was you had to fight waves and waves of enemies in order for you to get bazookas and grenades so then you could throw at the missile, which seems kind of counterintuitive to what the objective is. Like, you want to destroy this thing, I get it, but you're standing right next to a missile that you're shooting bazookas at. That seems a little dangerous. I'm just saying.
It's a video game.
Yeah, it is.
And considering the era it was made in, considering like it was made in like the mid 80s, like at the height of Cold, like the end of the Cold War. We didn't even
talk about that. Yeah, this reeks of Cold War.
So that's probably a nuke. You're firing RPGs at a nuke to make it even better.
Oh my god, that'd be so dumb if someone actually did that in real life.
They didn't.
I don't know. That's true. That's
how the Cold War was won. We blew up their nukes with green berets and their bazookas
and their knives. Their bazooka knives.
Their bazookas and knives.
Oh my god! This game completely screams of Cold War. In fact, I believe in the arcade version, you do go into a Russian military base to rescue POWs. I don't know if that's the same case in the NES version because they did change some story elements.
Was that more the sequel?
They might have removed it from the NES version only because of Nintendo's policies, you know, because Nintendo had bizarre censorship policies. Like, you couldn't include anything related to religion at all. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, that got changed during the localization process on the NES for us. So I wouldn't be surprised if they changed something like that. I'd have to double check. But then again, you also have things like in Bionic Commando where you just blow up Hitler's head. So, which probably shouldn't have, like, it was pretty gruesome, especially for the NES. So who knows? Maybe it didn't change at all. I don't know where I'm going with this, but this game kind of reeks of Cold War, everything. And it's a very 80s thing. It's something that, I mean, the Cold War was still going on, so it's not surprising.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's called Russian Attack in North America, right? Because to play off the Cold War hysteria, like, yeah, get it, Russian, haha.
How close did Red Dawn come out to this?
Oh god, I don't know. I should know.
I think Red Dawn was 84,
so it was a few years, but I mean, you were still, it was still during the Reagan era. You know, the whole entire tear down this wall, and you're going into the Bush era. And
holy shit, I was right. It is 84. Sorry, go on.
There it is. So, like, yeah, the whole entire Russia is still the bad guy. Rambo is still a big deal. This was the height of, you know, gotta go get those Ruskies. So, yeah, it's all there, man. It's all there. And, like, even the atmosphere. Yeah, like, even the music feels very kind of what I wanted to, Russian. Yeah. That, like, the music, like, there's pretty good. Of that. Yeah, it's very good. I think it's very good. I mean, there's not a lot of selection, but I think, like, it's, again, going back to what I said earlier about Konami games, this is something Konami always did right. Konami and Capcom always knocked that shit out of the park. You knew you were going to get an A+ soundtrack always. Mm-hmm.
And Konami specifically is known for their drums. Like, their drum samples were always really good on Konami games. And I really loved, I like the music for this. I will say one knock against it. None of the levels music was very distinct. Like, I don't know if they repeated songs. I could honestly not tell. Like, it all sounded so similar. It was hard for me to tell. Now, I didn't listen too intently, so I'd have to go back and rewatch the whole Let's Play of it. But it was very hard for me to tell if there was unique songs in each level or if they recycled tracks, because it all sounded very the same.
They recycle tracks. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounded very samey to me.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, the track list is very short. So if you see someone that has, like, they say they have a vinyl of Russian Attack, because, you know, getting vinyls of old video games is a thing. If they say, yeah, I have the Russian Attack vinyl, it's like, okay, great. Is it on mini vinyl? Because, like, there's only, like, three songs. So there's probably more than three, maybe five. But, there's not a lot to the soundtrack in terms of quantity. The quality is, I mean, it's you're not going to listen to it on, like, an MP. You're not going to listen to it on a YouTube stream or anything like that.
It's not hooky enough that you would remember it outside of the game. But when you're in the game, it's fun to listen to.
It's not as good as Contra, that's for sure. It's not as good as
Castlevania.
No, nowhere near. Not as good as Life Force or Gradius. But it's still considering, like, you only have a limited track selection, every single one of these tracks is still catchy. It's still good. You're not going to remember it that much. I mean, I remember it. I do. But like when you mention it, but it's not something that sticks with me like a Castlevania does or a Contra does.
Yeah. Like you say Castlevania and almost everyone starts that do 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 do. Like, yep. you know that musical sting immediately. This one, I couldn't tell you what the musical sting is. But I also only really listened to it for, 15, 20 minutes. So
yeah.
Who really knows? Is there anything else you would want to talk about before we just kind of, we lightly touch on it by lightly, just kind of bring him up and just, that's pretty much it. But talk about the sequels to this game, which no one really knows exist. And I did not know exist until doing research for this episode.
I think the only time I've really heard of a sequel is I can't even remember the YouTube channel I watched, but they did this retrospective on Russian Attack. And that's why I heard about the Russian Attack 2 or whatever it was called. You said MIA. And then there was another one. But that's the extent I've heard of it. I didn't even know that the game that came out on Xbox that we discussed that before we started recording was a Russian Attack sequel until I watched that video. I'm like, oh. Okay.
it's very strange. So,
yeah.
Well, so there's a spiritual sequel called MIA or Missing in Action. It came out in 1989 in the arcade. So, just, a couple years after the fact, because what did I say? It was 85 in the arcade. So, it was like 4 years later, they released a spiritual sequel called Missing in Action. And I honestly don't know much about it. I found it because of Hardcore Gaming 101, and I don't want to just read off their article. But from what the overall vibe they got, it wasn't quite as tightly designed. This is a quote from them. Overall, MIA doesn't feel quite as tightly designed as what came before it, although it may be because it has so many other games of its new era to compete with. So since it came out in 87 in the arcade, it had a lot of newer stuff, and this just felt like a retread. From what I'm reading here, it seems it appears to be like a retread of the original one, which at that point was 4 years old. Sorry, 89, not even 87. It was 89 in the arcade. So you're looking at trends from 4 years prior. The third game in the series came out in 2011, and it was called Russian Attack Expatriate, and it was released for the Xbox Live Arcade on the 360 and PSN on the PS3.
Didn't even know that came wonder. Out.
Neither did I. This was back in the era though, when, because this is, this is the same generation as the Wii. So Konami was doing those Rebirth series on the WiiWare, on the Wii Store. You have Contra, right? Rebirth, you have Castlevania Rebirth, you have Gradius Rebirth. Gradius. They also apparently had, is it Gradius? I always just like, I don't know.
Whatever.
Apparently, I didn't know this. They did a reboot, or not a reboot, but a sequel for Rocket Knight on like the PSN.
Yeah, I know that. I know about that. Yeah, I do know about that. Yeah, that was not well perceived.
No, it was not. Actually, it's got a 72% on Metacritic. That's kind of surprising. I actually, now that I think about it, I watched our buddies Try and Corey from My Life in Gaming play it on one of their streams, one of their Sunday night streams, and like I had no idea that this was like I watched them play it. I'm like, they made this, and it's a fully like a 3D side-scrolling platformer, if that makes sense, kind of in the same vein as new Super Mario Bros. And whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much all I really have to say about Russian Attack. I don't know what more I could really add. Is there anything you would like to add before we wrap this all up?
I would just like to say that if you're going to look for a simple NES game that doesn't cost too much, because so many retro games nowadays cost a premium. This is a game I think that's still relatively affordable. I'd have to look it up. If it's not, I'm sorry, but it's a game that is, you can still get relatively cheap in an era where, you want to get a Contra, you want to get a Castlevania, you're paying 20, 30 bucks. And I think this game is like still around $10, and you can give it a shot. It provides that old NES feel. And it's just generally, it's not the best game in the world, but it's a very solid and a game that you should definitely, I think, check out. It does hit you right in the feels, especially if you're a fan of old arcade games. So
there is other ways to play it as well. There is a re-release on the Game Boy Advance. It was part of Konami's the Konami Collector Series Arcade Advanced game for the Game Boy Advance, and it was also the Konami Classic Series arcade hits for the Nintendo DS. It was included in those two arcade series, and more obscurely, it was included on KonamiNet DX, which I've never heard of before, but it was a mobile phone port. It was Green Beret, you know, the Japanese version of the game, was released for smartphones in Japan in 2006. The mobile version is a direct port of the Famicom version with a new health bar. That's directly from Wikipedia. And then the final thing it says, the mobile port was re-released in China for Java phones on December 26th, 2008. In all honesty, I am fascinated by whatever the hell KonamiNet DX is, and I am going to start looking into what that is, because I've never heard of it before, and I'm kind of curious as to what it is.
Is there pachinko line or something? I'm just kidding.
You wouldn't just kidding. I mean, I would not be
watch
surprised.
As it turns out to be that. Yeah, green beret pachinko machine.
That would be so shitty. Oh my god. But all right, that will do it for this episode of the Still Loading Podcast. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I mean, we're 58 minutes into recording now, so we got an hour out of this, you know, after editing and also adding some songs in. I'm surprised we were able to talk for an hour about a 15 minute playthrough NES game. So thank you so much for joining me for this. Where can everybody find you and your wonderful podcast online?
Well, I'm from the Retro Hangover Podcast, and what we do is we take a game, and me and my partner Shane, we talk about it, and we go over, you know, the story, the presentation, and how well it's held up today. And yeah, we have a good time, and we talk about dick dragons. And you can find us at linktree.com/retrohangover, which is linktr.ee/retrohangover, and you can find all the links to all of our socials, our Discord, our podcast, and everything like that, and we hope to see you there, so stop on by.
As usual for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show and for them to check it out. If you want to support it monetarily or support me monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes a couple days earlier at a higher bitrate, as well as access to a Patreon exclusive Discord. If you want to support me a little bit further, there's a $5 level, which will get you all of that plus 2 extra bonus episodes a month. But the most important shout out, of course, is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I can't believe it. An hour of Russians and Russian attack and lots of knife stabbing tanks, and it was a wonderful time. Chris, thank you so much for joining me. It was a very stabby time.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a joy to talk with you, Josh. As you know, I have a great time every single time we sit down and have a conversation. And I'm sure that people who follow our podcast will hear us collaborating here soon in the future as well. And I think they'll be looking forward to that.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. That we'll leave that as a little teaser. There's something big coming up. So with all that said, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Bye.
don't want to.